And you are listening to KVMR FM Nevada City, KCPC Camino. My name is Susan Schreiber, and this is The Women's Show. Welcome to The Women's Show. The Women's Show is produced by individual members of KVMR's Women's Collective. The mission of the Women's Collective is to provide programming that encompasses music, public affairs, and spoken word. Well, welcome. This is Catherine Jordan sitting right in front of me in the studio. She is a poet and author joining us from Berkeley, California.
Thanks for having me, Susan. It's so great to be here.
My pleasure. It's just wonderful to have you in front of me. And I know I've known you for a long time, and I know that you're a musician, you've been teaching music for many years, so how did it come to be that you started writing?
Well, the truth is I was writing poems in high school and a little bit in college, and lately I've been looking back through all my journals. I'm astounded at how many poems I actually wrote that never saw the light of day. But then I ended up getting married and having kids and basically deciding that when my kids were little, I would parlay my music skills into free tuition. So I started playing music and doing all that. And music just came really naturally to me so that I could make money doing it. And I loved it. And I taught youth all the way through high school. So it was choirs and American folkloric music, and it was great. But when I left teaching a few years ago, I thought, well, wonder if there's anything left in me with that poetry and with that writing. And so the first thing I did was I was very blessed to find out about an amazing writing workshop with Ellen Bass and Kim Rosen. And Kim Rosen is all about doing these poetry dives where you just are given tons of experiential support to get into your deepest self, stuff that you didn't even know you were thinking about until you're with her. And Ellen is the craft woman, and she is, her poems are in the New Yorker now. So I had such a big boost from that. The next thing I know, I'm just writing and writing and writing and going to workshops. So changed my life.
Yeah. And I know if you're going into your deepest self, that you came from a military family as a youth, you grew up traveling around a lot, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's really ridiculous. I went to 19 schools by the time I graduated from high school. That's not counting kindergarten and the moves all before starting school. So yeah, I moved too much, but it had a good effect of making me able to connect with people and be open to new experiences.
And so with that military background, was it not too far along that your father had to go to Vietnam?
Absolutely. It seemed like a long way into my life, because when you're young, time is really telescoped and it seems forever. But by the time I was 11, my mother had remarried, so her new husband, my stepfather, John, and my father, Bob, and my uncle were all in Vietnam at the same time. And so my dad and my stepfather there, and that was extremely destructive to our family. And my mother was left bereft of any support on the West Coast, where she didn't know anyone, and she just fell apart. And war is a terrible tragedy for everyone, and it just creates ripple effects. So it basically destroyed our family. So my mother's marriage didn't last but about a year after her husband came back. And she drank very heavily during that time. And she just couldn't help herself. She tried to get support, and it really wasn't there. So the chaplains on base would say, you have to buck up. And that was the message from the military. And then the Navy doctors would give her antipsychotic drugs. And she said, I didn't know this until much later in my life. And she said, yeah, I hallucinated for 3 days. And I couldn't do that. So her self-medication was rum and coke. So anyway, it was pretty hard on the family. So I would say that was a great tragedy. And I went back in the beginning of my writing and got into that stuff first. I just feel like you have to start with your primary wound, really, in writing, and then have, it's been like layers of an onion. I started there, and then I'm moving out toward the outside of my life where I am now. So my book mostly deals with the fallout from Vietnam.
I really enjoyed reading your book, and a lot of it, I mean, it's just so deep, and maybe you have something ready for us to
hear. Yeah. Well, the first poem in my book is called Tustin Arms, 1966, and Tustin is a town in Orange County, and that was really close to the Marine Corps Air Station where my stepfather was flying Phantoms, dropping bombs in Vietnam from his squadron, which was based in Santa Ana, right near Tustin. It's a whole different landscape down there now. But anyway, this is what it looked like then. Tustin Arms, 1966. The window, adorned by a prickly cactus, yields a small horizon. Stubble of newly built townhouses, pimpled here and there by giant piles of burning orange trees, smoldering in black heat. My mom says my dad is dropping something called napalm on the forests of Vietnam. I want to run through the orchards again, sweet smell of citrus blossom, but it's either hide from boys, hurling baseball-hard oranges, or sneak with them to lie down in tall clover. For now, I'll ride on the back of that stingray with the kid who never asks my name. It's late, and I creep down shag carpet, following sound threads. Find my mother entangled on her bed with an old friend from back home. How could you? I shout. Ram my poster-covered door in its jam, slam the lock. She pounds the wood with the palm of her hand. Insists everything's all right. Come out, please. So that's Tustin Arms, and I have about three or four other poems directly about the war in this book. And that's a war that nobody has talked about. It's like it never happened. So this second one is called Tiny Bubbles. It was Vietnam. Pilots would take their R&R in Honolulu, meeting their wives for a weekend of booze, sex, and tears. She went to meet him there, returning with an album by Don Ho, Tiny Bubbles, playing it over and over. I was 11, and I wanted the song to be about ocean waves. Make me feel happy. Make me feel fine. A couple of years after, she was too drunk to help me when I fell, and a big screw rammed into the sole of my foot. A doctor put his needle there and drew thread, pulling taut the gut, attending but not healing. An inch-long crescent moon scar of memory no hand could touch. Hobbling on crutches, away from home as much as possible. One Sunday morning, empty bottles and cigarette butts lay strewn across the officers' club carpet, like a movie where John Wayne busts several outlaws in the jaw and destroys the saloon. I, 14 years old, or maybe 13, sampled whiskey, rum, gin, whatever lay in my path, rolling on the floor, the sad world all giddy, and whirling. Now I understood why she drank every day, taking refuge in her tiny bubbles. War doesn't end when your love comes home. Inside her glass, small bubbles rose, quietly drifting toward greater air. The hole in my foot could never be touched until my mother died. And a Tibetan healer pushed in with her strong thumbs. I told her to beware my tenderfoot, but thought, what if it's all in my head? surrendering to her sure hands. I felt I'd cosseted that pain, like an old nail in the wall, when you're afraid to pull it out because it might make a bigger hole. I imagined love reaching into my foot, locating the little girl I'd been. I'll take care of you, I thought, and the pain ceased.
Beautiful. Thank you. So if you're just tuning in, this is Catherine Jordan. She's a poet and author, and she's visiting us from Berkeley. And she will be presenting a reading of her book on November 7th at the Open Book at 7 o'clock. She'll have a book signing there, and I think you'll be reading quite a lot of your book that evening.
I'll read some poems from my book and some new poems.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
So earlier today we were talking about how there's something called, is it a traumatizing poetry?
And there's
something where maybe people don't want to hear the hardships of others.
Yeah.
And yet other people say, oh, it's just wonderful to get to the bottom, have the truth of someone's life. And what has it been for you?
Well, thanks for asking. You know, I had no choice. I had to write these poems before I could write any other poems. And sometimes I've felt a little, you know, unsettled trying to read them for people because they're like, well, that's all over now. And, you know, there's a great writer and healer named Mark Nepo. He's a poet and he does workshops and he's just an amazing guy. And he said, when people ask me why I write about such dark things, he says, well, if I'd had a different life, I'd write about something else. But that's my life. And that's where I start. And I also came across an amazing article in the magazine called Poets and Writers last year. And it was an article about a woman writer who said, you know, writing about the grief and the real trauma of our lives, and everyone's had trauma, everyone, some kind of trauma, adjusting to this world, which can be savage sometimes. This woman said, writing is subversive. And I really could understand that. It's a very subversive thing to step up and say, no, things are not always all right. So I appreciated that very much. So that's what it's been like for me. It's been a little subversive.
Mm-hmm. And yet you've also described that it's quite healing.
Yes, it is so healing. It's not just the telling of the stories that we all have. It's the fact of trusting. I don't know if it's, for me, it's the divine. It's trusting the universe to take you to a place that you didn't even know you were going when you set down a piece of paper on your table and pick up your pen. And if you trust that, you actually find yourself writing things that surprise you. It's an amazing voyage of discovery, and that is healing because you're guided by something that people used to call, we used to call it back in the 1800s, our genius. And genius didn't used to mean someone who's smart. Genius comes from basically an Arabic word, jinn, which means the guiding and attending spirit of our lives. And so many, many, many people have discovered that if they trust that guiding and attending spirit, however you conceive it to be, you will find yourself bringing out things that are not just the trauma and the pain so that you can be healed by saying, which also has its own healing, but also the magic, the pure magic and the feeling of being at one with the universe because it's actually attending you.
Beautiful. Thank you. So we're going to take a musical break. You're listening to The Women's Show on KVMR. We have Kathy Jordan here in the studio. And Kathy actually chose Joni Mitchell's Cactus Tree to play in this break. So I hope you enjoy. It's been a while since I've heard it. Nice choice, Kathy.
you. How did you happen to pick this particular piece?
Well, I haven't heard it in a long time, for starters. But I actually was thinking about how when I was in my early 20s, I was hell-bent on freedom. And I was, we all were, you know, you and I both and everybody we knew. And I really claimed that freedom. And that was a good thing. But the thing is, I didn't know myself well enough to know that freedom, just as an ideal by itself, is it can be unhinged. And so that's why I was thinking I really didn't know myself as well, half as well as I could have.
And music of that time and art, it helps us know ourselves.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, for me, poetry is part of the whole scope of art, which helps us know ourselves. And I think it's really important and it's critical to human life to actually know ourselves. I mean, to not know ourselves is dangerous. And you can see the not knowing in the continual war making and materialism and all our values going off and astray sometimes. And that's our not knowing. Mm-hmm. So I'm very sad sometimes thinking about how art is marginalized so much in this country. And that actually has really deep roots in the whole Platonic tradition of saying that art only imitates life. But a lot of us would actually disagree. Art is life. It's part of life. It's part of what, as we've said, heals us, helps us know ourselves. And so we really need that. We need that art. We don't need it to be on the outside of every school curriculum, art, music, drama.
Mm-hmm. And what is your process? What is your discipline? Hmm. How did you happen to be able to put all this poetry out? What do you do?
Hmm. Well, I remember thinking when I left my work, I was a teacher and I had to be super, super disciplined all the time and have everything timed down to the second, have a whole lesson plan ready to go. I was just super organized. And I'm also a good self-starter. So I thought, okay, I'm gonna get out of teaching and I'm going to be the person who gets up at 5 and makes my coffee and writes until 9 and then I'm going to go bird watching till 12 and then I'm going to come home and play my guitar for 2 hours. And, you know, I just thought that my life would be like that. Turns out that my life was so regimented as a teacher. I can't even describe to you how crazy my life has been, such a patchwork since I left. I just write when I feel like it. And it goes against a lot of what people say you should do, but I've been blessed to be very prolific, and I just write when I feel like it, where I feel like it. And then I might not write a couple days, and I don't feel bad about it at all, and then suddenly I'm writing, and I just can't stop, and I get really obsessive, and I'll write for hours. So it's just, so I can't describe it. It's just been a real freeing thing for me. It's play. You know, like playing music, it's play. And even if I'm dealing with heavy subject, it's just play, especially revision. It's just like a big puzzle.
And the meaning, what is the meaning of poetry?
Well, it's really interesting because the word poetry and poesy comes from a Greek word, poiesis, and it means to make things. And I really appreciated that when Ellen Bass said, a poem is a made thing. She says it in every workshop, and I've been to about 3 of hers. She's a magnificent teacher and a real craftswoman when it comes to her work. And she has taught me so much craft, but she says a poem is a made thing, and I discover that it's true. It's like building a table. You know, it's got to have all the components, and you have to, you know, feel the wood and know the wood, and you have to be patient, and you have to sand it, and you have to really, really put your love into it. And it is very, very powerful building something after a lifetime of being a conduit, because a teacher is a conduit.
And the idea of story, what is the idea?
Well, I don't know. I just think, I mean, we hear a lot about story today, and now that's one of the most potent political ideas out there to recharge and revive young people of all walks of life, is to get their stories out. And I'm really excited about that.
Because, you know, basically, I really like what Rebecca Solnit said in her amazing book. It's a memoir called The Far Away Nearby. She said, all stories are fragments of one story. And that story is metamorphosis, change. Because change is the ultimate drama in life. It's the thing that we fear the most. It can also bring the most delirious joy. But change is the thing that we are always writing about.
Mm-hmm. Do you have some more of your poetry? Any of your new poetry?
Thank you. Well, I have a poem about we were talking a little bit earlier about starting where we come from, you know, with our writing. And this poem's called Agave. And it starts with an epigraph. And an epigraph is a little quotation at the head of a poem. And this epigraph is from a letter written by John Keats to his brother in 1817. And it's about a really important philosophy, I guess you could call it, that he gave birth to with this phrase called negative capability. And it's the first place it's been recorded. I mean negative capability. That is, when man is, or woman, capable of being in uncertainties, mysteries, doubts, without any irritable reaching after fact and reason. In the dry garden waiting for poems to bloom, I study the twisted spiral rosettes of agave. New stalks press into old, hold fast, share edges, until the older frond breaks free in negative capability, leaving its imprint etched on the younger penca. It was the hardest thing I ever did, leaving my brother to the street, handing him keys to unpaid storage unit. He said, I don't call you every time I need. Yes, but every time you call, you need. Even a year earlier, I could not have said such a thing. Some ask why I think on the past, but like these spiky plants, tilting greenly at aging stars, I can't unfurl, can't breathe into this word at the tip of my tongue without remembering where I come from.
Mm. Wow.
And thank you. This is a poem I wrote in Morocco this spring, this next one. I went to Morocco and I knew my husband was going to be working all day, so I decided to stay in the hotel area under the palms and in these beautiful gardens with flowing fountains and tile everywhere. And I was working on a manuscript, so I had taken some old journals that I really never wanted to see again. And I had joked with my son before I went there, hey, when I come back, you're going to help me build a bonfire and burn these things, right? Yeah. But here I am in Morocco. And this poem's called Ablution. Because I can't build a fire at this fine hotel, I dunk the journal in the fountain, fan the pages, bright Fabergé eggs shed in post-menstrual flow. Who was I then, and who might I have been? Streams of red and blue ink bleed out over my hand, drip on Berber tile, words staining green plants as I tip the weeping paper. Letters swirl, vanish, inking rich Marrakesh dirt. And in the palms, minas sing and seem to bless my ablutions. I hope no one sees me now, madwoman witch, throwing something off the Tallahatchie Bridge. And thus I give my cousined fertility that felt a baby the only thing that I could make, strength to shape healing poems, drenching loss and shame in holy water to bear myself as I really am.
Mm. Wow, very powerful.
Thank you.
And so eloquent.
Thanks.
And I'm so glad you're going to be reading in our local environs here in Grass Valley at the Open Book. And that's this coming Wednesday night, right? 7 o'clock, November 7th.
I'm really excited to do that. I'm so happy to be in this community over the next couple of days and just walking around and seeing how friendly people are and the beautiful fall colors, and to be able to come and just share some poems and conviviality with people really means a lot to me. I'm mm-hmm. so excited for the opportunity.
Well, I know you'll have a audience that listens very well. It's very engaging work.
Oh, well, I can't wait. I'm really excited about it, and I'm just thanking you for bringing me on the radio here so I can talk about it. Thank
Definitely.
You.
Well, I'm just really amazed by what you're able to create with your pen and paper.
Well, thank you.
So you have another song that you chose, and I'm just curious. Let's see. I think we'll just play it, and we'll see who this is. This is Save Your Breath, Coco Taylor.
Okay.
All right. We'll put this on. We're speaking with Catherine Jordan. She's a poet and author from Berkeley. And here's our next tune.
That sounds
woo. Now she's a powerful woman. Wow. Good choice.
Thank you.
I bet it comes from some place where you've written or felt the power.
Yeah. I think the power of female anger has never, ever been totally put out there. So this poem I'm going to read is called Mother's Day. Takes a surprising direction, but hang in there. Mother's Day. The SUV taps the woman pushing her cart, and she flies up, body tossed by red metal. Sitting on the asphalt, she howls into her phone, "Now my Mother's Day is ruined!" Leg bent, white bone showing. On a distant hill, a herd of black heifers low their distress, helpless against dogs and men on horses as their little calves skitter in fear, are caught, cut, and branded. Forlorn mothers, white nostrils, sniffing acrid smoke. A chirp sounds in the trees, and the naturalist bounds over snags and poison oak to catch a chick. He cups the infant in hand as the mother turkey rushes forward. Feathers flaring brown and black, consternation, voice whooping alarm. How could my mother have abandoned her 10-year-old son? And yet, when the sheriff pulled my brother from her arms by force, she charged down the road, beating on the squad car, trumpeting her rage for all the world to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's one of those poems of discovery. I had no idea that I was headed that way. I wanted to write about these odd things that really did happen on Mother's Day this year, where this woman got hit by a car in front of us, and like, oh no, she's crying about mother, and we went to assist. We were first responders, really. And that same day I'd been hiking and had seen these poor cows watching their babies get branded, and they couldn't do anything. And I'd just been hiking the day before, and the naturalist runs after the turkey chicks and picks one up. And I'm thinking, I just have to put these in one poem. And I never knew that suddenly my mother and my brother were going to erupt like characters. And that's the magic of writing that I love so much. This next poem is called Huipil, and it is about indigenous women. And I have a very close friend in Mexico who has devoted her life into designing pieces of art that are based on the huipil as a template. And that
the huipil is the traditional garb of the women of Central America way before the Europeans came. And a woman would get dressed every morning in her sacred huipil. She would see kind of prototype for what we think of as a peasant blouse now, with an opening for the neck. And when she would tell her stories in the embroidery that she would embroider onto the neck. And when she would put her head through the hole every day, it would be her giving birth to herself every day. So that's called a huipil. And my friend Lena Bartula in San Miguel de Allende has made really amazing work about this. And she's been in many, many galleries. And I just love her theme about women. So this is called huipil. And this is my huipil. Before horses and their masters claimed the highlands, when a woman would weave stories of nopal and mezquite into sacred huipil, hopes embroidered in que colores, before conquistadores made her bend over, she prayed to her goddess, donned mourning dress, and no hue waxed too bright nor too dark. Understand the threads of her years now cut into blistered fingers, calloused hands, she holding fabric to machine needles, beating a tempo. She keeps time, pieces cloth to make peasant blouses for peces gordos. She breaks colorless bobbin thread between filled teeth, hoping to catch a breeze under locked doors. Maybe the voice of her abuela whispering a call to arms.
Mm. Wow, what imagery.
Thank you. I have to think about that a lot because I go down to Mexico a lot and I'm encountering so many indigenous women down there, and I think about what their work used to be pre-colonial times and what it is now, you know. So I think about a lot of things. That's just on the surface.
You were just invited down there, weren't you, recently?
Yes, I just gave a reading there last week.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was lovely. It was very nice. The town of San Miguel is a very wonderful literary and arts center, and they have strong support for literature there. They have a whole beautiful room in their Bellas Artes building, which is an old convent. And all kinds of music and art goes on there. And they have their own literary sala right in that room. It's just wonderful. You can go and write there. A place to go write. So it's great. I am going to share one more feminine-oriented poem, if that's okay.
That's great.
And it's called Moth, and I just wrote it when I was down there a couple weeks ago. So this is my newest poem, and I'm really excited to read something so fresh.
Wonderful.
It's called Moth. I came to Mexico's high Bajío to write and recover from fear for my daughter. I woke in the night, and there on white field of ceiling crouched a huge insect. Whole compos of cumulus clouds, fleets of white-faced ibis, giggling faces of children, and all I saw was that one dark spot. Light revealed not a spider, but a giant moth. I imagined the thing dive-bombing my face as I slept, but I didn't want to kill it either. It hadn't hurt anyone. By morning it was gone, and I read of a moth that drank the tears of a grieving nymph. Later, my friend told me her bad luck story. What's the worst that can happen? I asked, because I always need to know. She corrected me. I prefer to think of the best possible outcome. When I lay down that night, I wondered where the moth hid. All night long, I heard the softest fluttering over and over, sounding for all the world like that special kiss my mother gave me once when I woke crying from bad dreams. She leaned over me face close enough to feel her breath and batted her eyelashes on my cheek. "It's a butterfly kiss," she said. "Can you feel it?" In the best possible world, my daughter remembers that I also did this for her.
Hmm. Oh, lovely. So much love and care. So,
fathers and daughters.
I'm really glad that you'll be reading. For those just tuning in, Kathy Jordan here will be reading at the Open Book, 7 o'clock Wednesday night, and have her book available there. You'll be signing those books.
Oh, thank you. I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for joining us here in Nevada City on KVMR.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been such a pleasure.
You are so welcome. And let's see. We'll finish with another piece that you chose called Miner's Child. And you chose Miner's Child because you're in the mining country.
Exactly.
Right? Okay, so here we go. Miner's Child. And this is?
Regina Carter.
Perfect. Regina Carter. Thank you again for coming.
And thank you, too.